So Tribeca Resources is in Chile. You mentioned the IOCG belt. I'd love to get more into that. But if you can tell us first about Chile as a jurisdiction, I mean, how is it?
Yeah, for sure. Look, Chile is a fantastic jurisdiction. And the more I work there and the more the other comparative jurisdictions seem to be having more and more issues these days, I start to appreciate how fantastic Chile is. And you know, in copper in particular, they're obviously starting to get a little bit bigger now in lithium, for example, and obviously gold and some other metals. But in terms of copper, you know, 23% of the global copper production comes from Chile. That's about 5.3 million tons every year. So we have two IOCG projects in Chile. One of them is called La Higuera, where we've now drilled two phases of drilling, and there's about 10,000 meters of drilling into that, and we've had some really nice intersections. The best was, 268 meters at 0.66 copper and about, I think, 0.14 gold. Plus, I think it's 150 or 200 ppm cobalt as well. You know, talking about our portfolio, I should also mention, and this picture you see behind me is from a new project we signed an LOI on in June this year, called Higuata, which is actually not an ICG but a big porphyry copper molybdenum project. It's about 120 kilometers north of the giant Puyahuasi and Quebrada Blanca deposits, you know, which you would have heard a bit about in terms of conversations about tech and Anglo and potential tie-ups, etc. So that's our latest project, Higuata. We're really excited about that because it has potential to be an absolute giant.
Good day. We have with me Dr. Paul Gao, a CEO and director of Tribeca Resources. And it's great to have you.
Yeah, look, thanks, Steve. It's a pleasure to be here. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so great. I'd love to hear more about your story, just kind of how you got connected with Tribeca. I believe that Tribeca is primarily a copper exploration based in Chile. If you can tell us who Paul Gao is, how you got connected to Tribeca, and tell me all about Tribeca.
Yeah, certainly. No, I love to tell everybody about Tribeca all the time, Steve. Yeah, look, as you mentioned, very strong focus on copper and Chile as well. And where Tribeca Resources came from was it was founded by myself and our president, Thomas Schmidt, a couple of years ago. We listed nearly 3 years ago now on the TSXV through an RTO. Thomas and I got together. We both originally worked for Xstrata Copper, and then I was with Glencore for a while. I was working in Brazil looking for iron oxide copper gold. That's IOCG deposits up in the Carajás district in northern Brazil. And Tom was working in an M&A role in Santiago. So we got together and we were looking, and copper is both our business. We come from Xstrata Copper. I've spent most of my life working in copper. And in particular, a lot of people may not know about iron oxide copper gold systems, which we've been very strongly focused on. And there's a couple of global terrains in Australia and Brazil where they're very prominent. And there's another one in Chile, which is called the Coastal Belt. So given Tom's background in Chile and mine in the IOCG, we said let's tackle northern Chile, the IOCG belt. So quite a few years ago, we sat down and we looked through all of the public information we could find and all of our networks and focused in on a couple of projects there in the belt that we've since acquired. So that's basically where Tribeca Resources comes from.
So Tribeca Resources is in Chile. You mentioned the IOCG belt. I'd love to get more into that, but if you can tell us first about Chile as a jurisdiction, I mean, how is it?
Yeah, oh, for sure. Look, Chile is a fantastic jurisdiction, and the more I work there, and the more other comparative jurisdictions seem to be having more and more issues these days, I start to appreciate how fantastic Chile is. And you know, in copper in particular, they're obviously starting to get a little bit bigger now in lithium, for example, and obviously gold and some other metals. But in terms of copper, you know, 23% of the global copper production comes from Chile. That's about 5.3 million tons every year. I think about 1.2 million tons comes from the giant Escondida deposit. But, It's the land of copper, so it's a great jurisdiction. Not only because the deposits are there and there's the geological prospectivity, but also because it's a mining country. There's been industrial mining going on in Chile for 150 years. So the country loves mining, and I think they get about 60% of their export income from mining. And of that 60, 45% is copper. So it's a real copper country. It's a great place to be. The in terms of regulatory environment, it's also fantastic. Probably about 2022, they started to I guess adjust their mining regulations, and part of that involved increases to royalties, which obviously no one was happy with, but it's ended up at a reasonable spot. So I think there's about a 46% maximum total taxation cap on operations there. And then also in the last couple of years, there's been rejigging of their mining regulations in terms of how long you can hold on to licenses for and exploration data and what needs to happen to it, etc. So it's a yeah, it's always been, and it's shaping up as an even better place to be working these days. So yeah, we love it, obviously.
Paul, your presentation said that you guys are a science-led, portfolio-driven exploration company. What does that mean exactly? And then if you can tell us how that plays into the properties and assets that you have, the La Higuera, Chiricuito, and Higuita?
Higuita. Yes,
Yeah.
yeah, Higuita. Yes. Yeah, no, look, so there's two points you touch on there, science driven. Essentially what we're trying to do is, and I come from a sort of quasi-academic background. I've been in and out of research organizations in the mining industry. And what we're trying to do is take a lot of the learnings that we've had from my work, particularly in iron oxide copper gold systems, and also in general from Australia. Chile is a relatively mature space in exploration terms, but what we're trying to do is find those places in Chile that have had less focus, and particularly areas that are undercover, for example. So in Australia, a lot of work is undercover purely by the nature of the geology versus the Andes, where a lot of the rocks are exposed at surface. So we're trying to apply those technologies and I guess scientific mineral systems concepts in Chile. And the second part you mentioned is portfolio. So we've taken a portfolio approach, which we think is suitable for early stage juniors, essentially spreading the costs of being a listed entity and explorer across various projects. So there's better capital allocation. And we have a relatively low cost base. I can tell you about it a bit later, but we don't have a lot of staff, etc. We have a very we run very lean and low cost. So we like to spread those costs across various projects. So we have various irons in the fire as such.
Paul, could you tell us, before you get into the La Higuera, if you can tell me about the IOCG belt, why that's significant, and then if you could jump into your key assets.
Yeah, sure. So look, IOCG, a lot of your listeners may not be familiar with this, but IOCG is the acronym for iron oxide copper gold deposits. Okay. So, copper production 101, there are typically about three styles of copper deposits that are significant globally. And the first is obviously porphyry copper deposits that everybody's familiar with, which produce, say about 75 to 80% of the world's copper. And then there are sediment-hosted copper deposits, which are the things like the Democratic Republic of Congo, etc., the African Copper Belt, and they produce sort of 10 or 15% of the world's copper. And the rest predominantly comes from these iron oxide copper gold deposits. Deposits and a little bit from VHMS, volcanic-hosted massive sulfide deposits, certainly that Canadians would be very familiar with. So iron oxide copper gold deposits. The big example is a deposit called Olympic Dam in Australia, which is a 9 or 10 billion ton deposit that produces copper, gold, silver. It actually produces uranium. And has a lot of rare earths with it as well, although those rare earths currently go to tailings. But the iron oxide copper gold deposits are starting to become a much more prominent copper producer globally. And there are four belts. There's the Olympic Province, which has the enormous Olympic Dam deposit in Australia. There's the Cloncurry deposit in northern Australia. There's the Carajás in northern Brazil, where I've spent a lot of time. And then there is the Chilean iron oxide copper gold belt. So we really focused on the iron oxide copper gold belt due to my background. I've worked in that a lot. So that's basically what that deposit style is. So that's a bit of a refresher. And so we have two IOCG deposit, projects in Chile. One of them is called La Higuera, where we've now drilled two phases of drilling, and there's about 10,000 meters of drilling into that. And we've had some really nice intersections. The best was, 268 meters at 0.66 copper and about, 0.14 gold. Plus, I think it's 150 or 200 ppm cobalt as well, and so a lot of these ICG deposits, particularly in Chile, produce cobalt also. And then we have another project called Chiricuto, which is an ICG project. It's less advanced. We've done one phase of drilling earlier this year there. It's in the area of northern Chile that has a mine, and the Mantoverde mine, the Santo Domingo project from Capstone Copper, who were going great guns there and expanding at speed. So that's what ICG deposits are, and they're the two that we have. And talking about our portfolio, I should also mention, and this picture you see behind me is from a new project we signed an LOI on in June this year, called Higuata, which is actually not an ICG but a big porphyry copper molybdenum project. It's about 120 kilometers north of the giant Puyahuasi and Quebrada Blanca deposits, which you would have heard a bit about in terms of conversations about tech and Anglo and potential tie-ups, etc. So that's our latest project, Higuata. We're really excited about that because it has potential to be an absolute giant. So we're talking about work plans on that. We are in the process of a raise at the moment. We launched this week using the LIFE offering system in Canada, where TSXV listed, and we are raising that funding to do the work here at Higuata. So we're really looking for giant deposits. So all of the surrounding players or all the majors, Codelco, BHP, Glencore, etc. So we're looking for enormous deposits here. So that's a quick overview about three projects in Chile.
So I think the IOCG belt, there's a lot of people there. There's a lot of big players there. They see something. What do you think you have there, given everyone else is bought in, but what do you think you have?
Yeah, well, the ICG belt in Chile is very popular amongst the mid tiers. So, for example, Lundin have the giant Candelaria deposit, and Capstone Copper have the Mantoverde. There's a bunch of those other mid tier players throughout the belt. Now, why we like the belt and what we think we have it, particularly at La Higuera, which is our most advanced project, is that the belt is actually at sort of between 400 and 1,000 meters altitude. And it has all of the infrastructure of northern Chile running through it because it's such benign territory that all of the infrastructure, the Pan American Highway and the power lines that run north south in Chile, all run through that coastal belt. So that it's really lowers the hurdle for what you need to form an economic mine. So it's nice for juniors, A, because the capital cost of any project you discover is lower, but B, also the capital cost of exploring is lower because the access is so great. So at La Higuera, we've done two phases of drilling, and I think the average cost ended up being about $270 all in per meter for drilling. So that's relatively inexpensive. So and the other thing I should say is that we're looking open pittable as well, so that that zone is fantastic for open pit mines. And when you drive up through northern Chile, it's amazing. Every 10 minutes you pass a new mine on a hillside next to you. It's phenomenal.
Well, I want to switch gears just a little bit here. If you can tell me about your share structure, how many shares fully diluted, options, warrants, written, and then insiders, institutions that are involved.
Yeah, sure. It's so we have I think it's about 60 odd million shares on offer. I have the numbers here. Yeah, 66 million shares outstanding. And then we're not heavily diluted. So fully diluted, we go from 66 up to 70 million shares. So sort of well less than 10% in dilution with warrants and options outstanding, etc. Our current share price is I think about 25 or 26 cents. So that gives us a market cap of sort of in the 16 millions, I think. In terms of who our holders are, we're very tightly held, which is sort of a double-edged sword. A, it's fantastic to have a tight share register, but B, we don't perhaps have as much liquidity as we'd like. We're looking to change that, I guess. For example, the raise that we kicked off this week, we're hoping to get some more shareholders in. In that raise, for example, our shareholders, we have a couple of key shareholders, cornerstone shareholders, one that owns about 14, 15%, and the other one about 5%. And they're both coming in pro rata to maintain their holdings. And we're lucky, or well, I guess it's not luck, but it's also hard work that we have some fantastic shareholders who want to stay in and not dilute for the long run because they see the value in the company. And obviously in exploration, it is not always an immediate return, and you have to stick at it for a little while. So we've got some fantastic shareholders. So we have a relatively large slice held by management, which is about 32%, and then we have sort of 20 to 25% high net worths essentially, and then the rest is retail, particularly what we inherited from the shell in our RTO. So that's sort of how we sit in terms of share structure.
Paul, how much capital do you guys have, and what's the plan for growth?
Yeah, look, at the moment we have we've let our cash box run down a little bit. We have about 300,000 Canadian in the bank, which is not a lot, albeit operating costs, our G&A costs are about 600,000 or 700,000 Canadian per year. So that will last us quite a while. But we tend to run with and I guess most juniors do this. Most junior explorers is your run with you work up a program, and then you go and get the funding to complete that program. So we've worked up two programs now at La Higuera and Higuata, and so we're just in that raise process at the moment to increase the cash resources to cover those exploration programs, and they're planned to be happening in the next we're going to kick off as soon as we get this raise closed in the last quarter of this or next month essentially, and that drilling is planned for the next 6 to 12 months. So that's basically the growth plan at the moment. And there should be plenty of news coming out from that with the drilling and some of the on-ground activities we're doing beforehand.
Paul, I'm a big believer in copper. I mean, I think there's, as I know that there's a huge shortage. So for investors who are looking to invest in copper or precious metals or whatever, but they're not sure where to invest. They're asking, what about this company? What can you tell us and the about investors about why we should invest, or why people should at least follow the story of Tribeca? I mean, if you can tell us maybe where you are on the Lassonde curve, or where you have a deep value, how maybe you're undervalued, or just why Tribeca's should be at least something that they should look further into.
Yeah, certainly. And you make that point about copper, and it's interesting. I remember reading about a year ago that the copper uptick is one of the most anticipated resource booms in history. A bit because it always seemed to be, I've worked in copper companies all my life, and you would have seen the plots where there's the predicted copper production and the predicted copper demand, and there's always this big gap. And that I think is starting to come to fruition now with those staggering numbers that we saw from one of the reports last year. I've forgotten who put it out, but it was by 2035 we're basically going to need to double copper production, etc. And so it's copper is the place to be, and I think we're finally getting to that stage now. I guess there's been a few concerns. Some of it was based on EV penetration, etc., which doesn't seem to be happening as quickly as we'd imagined, but still. you know, there's incredible copper demand. So we think it's the place to be. And I guess we're starting to see that happening now. There is obviously a few jags up and down with the tariff announcements, et cetera, early this year, and the arbitrage between the LME and the COMEX, et cetera. But it seems to be settling down now. But copper is roaring along. And, you know, when you look at all the issues with copper supply, you know, if you've got some of the top 20 mines globally, you have Cobre Panama, Kamoa Kakula, Quebrada Blanca is having some issues, and Grassbird's had that big landslide that's impacting their production. That's, you know, it takes some pretty large chunks out of supply. So I think the copper price is going to keep going. And so, well, why you should be thinking about Tribeca in that context is basically we are targeting large deposits. We're very much focused on not going into small vein type deposits and getting a small project into production, etc. We are really looking for the large deposits that will eventually be bought out by the mid tiers in the IOCG belt or the majors indeed up in the porphyry districts. And our projects, I guess we had the portfolio approach, and La Higuera is our most advanced project where we've had the resource geologists have a look at it internally, but we don't have any numbers we can put out, and that's had 10,000 meters of drilling versus Higuata that we're looking at behind me, which has had two 300 meter holes back in the 90s. So, you know, very, very immature. So we've staggered our portfolio from the very earliest stages through to more advanced. But our sweet spot is basically that exploration, resource delineation, and early studies phase, I guess. So, you know, we think we have a really, really good portfolio of three projects now, and that, you know, that they all are looking good in terms of copper. So, you know, we think Tribeca is a good place to be if you're looking for copper juniors, and you know, we would believe that.
Paul, just as a disclaimer, Tribeca has not paid for this interview. I am not currently an investor in Tribeca, but they have certainly checked a lot of the boxes, and that's why we're having this conversation, and that can certainly change. If other investors want to reach out to you, Paul, to learn more about Tribeca, if you can tell us about your website, how people can reach you, as well as where you're trading and what your ticker symbol is.
Yeah, certainly. To start with, our ticker symbol is TSXV, TRBC. And we do have a secondary listing on the OTC, and that ticker is TRRCF. Our website is tribecaresources.com, and you'll find quite a bit of information there, including all the usual news releases, etc. If anybody wants to reach out to me personally, try admin@tribecaresources.com. The email, that's admin@tribecaresources.com, and that will come to me. We like to interact with our shareholders as much as possible, so you know we certainly welcome that interaction. So we're currently, you asked about our share price, we're currently trading at about 25 or 26 cents. Our offering is at 21 cents with a half warrant, the units, and I guess our highs and lows in the last 12 months in terms of trading have been from about I think 20 cents up to 40 cents. So that's sort of a bit of an overview of where we're trading.
Awesome. Well, Paul, thanks so much for sharing your story and letting us get to know you a bit. And I hope that this story will get out there and people will benefit from it. So Paul, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, look, thank you indeed, Steve. Great to see you.
All right.
Cheers.